Clay, I'm just here last week. Boy, look at it. You got up 18 shots. Tell me how it feels.
18 shots in 20 minutes. That's pretty normal for myself. So I was just happy to be out there doing what I love again, get my rhythm back. It feels really good.
It's 941 days. The rehab's been rigorous. How did you sleep last night? How was the feeling driving to the arena?
Just Live, the product I invested in. That's how I slept. It's like a melatonin-type CBD. And driving to the arena, I got a lot of old feelings again about all the game days. And I was just, it was surreal. And the ovation to start the game. And I just was so grateful for these fans. It was special. I'll never forget this night.
You mentioned that you're never going to give up on your shot. You made big threes. But I was impressed how you moved around defensively. You had two big blocks there throughout the game.
Yeah, man. My wind is going to get better each week. And I'm just grateful to be doing what I love again. Last 2 years have given me a sense of, you know, gratefulness into doing this nightly. It's not easy. And it comes with the cost as far as the wear and tear in your body. And I just love being a two-way impactful player. It's what I pride myself on.
Welcome back.
Thank you, Dennis.
You see that Mac Dre lip? How long you think Clay been practicing that snarl in the mirror the last 900 days, man? Now it's like a part of him now. Like, that's muscle memory. I know Steph has tried to flash the Mac Dre, right? The lip roll. I'm not even going to try and do it because I don't do it, right? But we've seen Steph play with it because there's imagery of him. There's a mural of it. But Clay's got that down, right, man? And that dunk, man. I know some of y'all, we're holding your breath on the landing, right? It was a very eerily similar to the landing in the finals on the Danny Green play, right? But that dunk is the reason why he's going to get back to damn near the same player he was, right? It's his mindset. And you know, he was hunting that dunk on the first possession. When he came off the pin down and curled, he was going up to punch that, but Allen and those lanky boys got over and he had to bring it down and just finish with a layup. But yeah, man, I didn't know how it was going to feel. I was kind of scared, to be honest with you. I was scared. Like, I was excited. And then when the moment hit, you get the chills, you get a little emotional through the introductions. Did you notice how Steph, when they were doing the introductions, he ran out with Looney? They called Steph's name, right? Out of Davidson, but he dipped out through the lineup with Looney. So even while they're calling Steph's name, the focus in the camera was on Clay. It was straight out of a movie. As the tip came and the jump ball came and the game started, all of a sudden I found myself kind of just nervous that he was going to be all right. I don't know. I can't explain it, man. I can't explain it. I think it was just a long day of exhilarating sports, right? Like the City of Angels. Can't get no stranger. The Bay comes down and your fans treat you like a stranger. I'm just talking to you. We're going to have plenty of time to talk about Clay. I thought his body looked all right. Clearly, he hadn't hit the weight room. But I think for him at his age, his stage, who he is as a basketball player, it's more about mobility and then the chain of muscles firing properly. Your posterior chain, your glutes, your hamstrings, your lower back, your core, everything down to your calf, your foot, your Achilles, all the little muscles. It's all a chain. It's all got to get firing correctly. And that's the biggest challenge when you've missed that much time. So, yeah, you know, some people ask me about, like, what do you think of his frame and his body? Yeah, a guy that's built like Clay, to be honest with you, he might have put on too much weight if he had focused on actually lifting weights. It's about mobility and muscle firing. That you saw how aggressive he was, man. The jumper, I'm going to talk about that in today's breakdown. If you like my content, the Hezzy, the YouTube stuff, you're going to love my breakdowns on Patreon. You can gain access for as little as $1 a month. I'm telling you, it's well worth it. I'll give you a little bit. I'll give you a little bit of talk on the Clay. He's elevating less, right? He's elevating less, and that may be expected. Now, in all reality, it might make him more lethal because, you know, it you can control it more. Now, where it will hurt, there's always a give and take with something, right? And what you may be giving is he won't be able to hit as many difficult shots, right? The elevation allowed him to make some nasty contested shots and on the move as well. So when you lose some elevation on the jumper, you may not be as dynamic of a shooter, but all in all, squared up open shots, you could be even more precise and consistent. So there's a give and take with that. Again, we'll cover everything about the Warriors in this breakdown, so go check that out later this afternoon on my Patreon. I do want to talk about Steph here for a second, because last night was, to me, further proof that his shooting woes of late is mental. Because he starts out the game 4-4, right? And then he missed a bunch to end the game. But for the first 20 minutes of that game or so, think about it. For the first time since Kevin Durant has left the Warriors, the microscope and the focus was not on Steph Curry. And so I think he could just exhale and play basketball, right? For the first time, it wasn't all about him. It was about Klay. And all of a sudden, you saw that joy and that freedom come back to his game, and he started off 4-4. It was a great start for us, and then it tapered off. But I think that was a perfect example of the mindset. And also just a reminder of the microscope and the pressure that's on Steph. It's not just the defenses. Everybody loves to snap those pictures of his gravity where there's like four or five guys surrounded by him. So it's not just the physical attention he gets on the court. It's the media attention. It's the scrutiny. It's the obligations from fans and little kids that want to see him and wave to him that is all sapping the battery of the chef. And Klay, hopefully moving forward, is going to alleviate that. Because let's be honest here now, even on this road trip, right? The focus in the story is going to be Klay. Now, he's a superstar, right? He's a legend. So there's going to be focus on Steph. But Klay is going to help draw some of that attention away, not just on the court as a shooter, but just the publicity of his comeback. And I think that should lessen the load and let Steph get back to playing basketball. Let's talk a little bit about these Cavs, though. Evan Mobley doesn't have the juice. He's got everything else. He's got everything else, right? All the tools. He just doesn't have the juice. I think that's pretty clear. And what I mean by that, you say, with the juice, the alpha mentality, right? And I think some of that is nature, and I think some of that is nurture. Remind you, he's a little bro. He has played with his big brother his entire career up until this season. He's also a coach's son. So some of that nurture has been for him to fall in line. He hasn't had the opportunity to develop being a natural leader. Listen, that could be a good thing. I'm not saying he can't be a 10-time All-Star. He can, right? What I'm saying is I don't think he's going to be an MVP. I don't think he's going to be like a dominant guy. But how many guys are, right? So I'm not knocking him. I'm just saying I don't see that demeanor, right? Because I think that's a mentality. For instance, you look at someone like Jonathan Kuminga, who shows that if he puts in the work, stays healthy, like he's got a chance to be dominant, because you can see it in his mentality early, right? He's a take no prisoners type of cat. And so, you know, look, would I trade Kuminga for Mobley right now? Absolutely. I'm not saying that. Don't get me wrong, because I think Mobley, his floor is an all-star. He's going to be an all-star, right? I just don't see that mentality to be a dominant superstar. Rondo was out there jacking up threes, damn near pulled him back in that game. Here's what I see for this Cavs team. It's a good story. They're a fun watch. I like them. I like what they're doing here. This is going to be the year in the playoffs where they get bullied. It's going to be a welcome to the playoffs first round matchup for them. I don't know who they're, you know, obviously I don't know who they're going to get yet, but they're going to get physically bullied. It's going to be one of that learning experience of, oh, this is what the playoffs are like. Like, we got out physical because you got soft-ass Markkanen in there. Evan Mobley's still a teenager, right? They just don't have any playoff experience. And right now, this regular season, they've kind of been afforded the luxury of sneaking up on teams, right? And, you know, now teams are like, all right, Cleveland, we got to take them serious. But these first 30 games, they haven't got teams' best shot. And last night, you saw a playoff-like atmosphere where it was emotional, and they got bullied. Shout out to Loon Dog. Loon was out there bullying them young boys in the paint, 18 rebounds. The Anta boys back to business. Anyway, go check out that breakdown later on Patreon. Let's keep it pushing here. The Lakers, over the last 4 or 5 days, they've had a couple of feel-good wins, right? Malik Monk has been going off. Bron continues to shoot the ball well. Then last night, Sunday, it kind of all got wiped away, right? Because Memphis beat them boys like they stole something last night. There was an attitude as if this easy, like this light work. It was light work for Memphis last night, and you could see Bron was salty about it, because there's a difference, right? There's a difference between losing and getting clowned, and that was borderline getting clowned last night, how easy Memphis was disposing of this older Lakers team. I'm a sneakerhead when it comes to hoop shoes. I'm not a sneakerhead when it comes to like wearing, you know, paying $500 for shoes and wearing them to the mall. No, no, no. But I like to have a variety of shoes I hoop in. Have you noticed LeBron is not wearing his new 18s? Those bubbly Space Jam looking joints? He's not wearing them. So those look like a miss. Those look like a miss when the signature athlete's not wearing his new shoe. But, you know, the reality of it is not for 90% of hoopers, weekend warriors, whoever they are, you should never be wearing LeBrons, right? Most people, most humans do not have the weight to utilize that cushion system. It's a crazy cushion setup. And so what you're doing is you're just giving away stability in court feel. But speaking of shoes, isn't Ja up next? Jaws up next for a lot of things, possibly, right? But, you know, you talk about usually it's guards that sell the most shoes. And I don't know if he's signed with Nike, but the Jaws, those are going to be the next big shoe to sell if he goes with Nike. Don't go to Adidas, Ja. Don't do it. Don't do it, man. So, but yeah, you saw that crazy block with his head at the top of the square. That whatever type of shoe, signature shoe they have for Ja, they got to give him some crazy stability in the landing. It's got to, But yeah, they dominated the hell out of this Lakers team, man. And the Grizzlies have won 9 in a row, haven't lost since that last matchup with the Warriors. And so that sets up for a huge game Tuesday in Memphis against the Warriors. That's going to be a fun one. Now, they lost Dylan Brooks Saturday. By the way, that was the back end of a back-to-back. They'd been in L.A. They just like rolled out Sunday morning, whooped him. But they lost Dylan Brooks to an ankle sprain Saturday against the Clippers. A bad one. The team's already announced he's out a month, right? Because usually, you know, teams they'll be modest with an ankle sprain. They'll just list a guy day-to-day. It was severe enough that they're like, no, he's out for the month. So, you know, they've been playing well without him anyway, right? He's been in and out of the lineup for various reasons. And then the other thing that I didn't touch on with the Warrior game was Draymond strained his calf in pregame warmups. I don't like this. Those that rock with me tight know I had a calf injury a few summers ago that lasted me the entire fucking summer. Calves are nothing to play with, man. So I hope we're going to need him for that road trip. I don't know. I didn't like the way he walked off the court. But yeah, that Tuesday Warriors-Memphis game, where is Memphis going to get 10 in a row or the Warriors going to snap that shit back? That could be spicy. I want to talk about the Hawks here for a second. The Atlanta Hawks, remember, they were in the Eastern Conference Finals last year, the darlings of the East. They're sitting at 17-22. They're 5 games below 500 in the East. Lost to a kid yesterday named Coffee. The Clippers, you know, the Clippers are undermanned right now. The Clippers beat them in L.A. last night on the back end of a back-to-back. I think it's very clear the Hawks are another one of these teams that's got to make a move. They've got to make a move, and they have a lot of depth and a lot of pieces. So I'll propose something for you. What if they went and got Zion? Zion and Trey. And this is operating under the premise that the Pelicans understand, like, look, there's a chance Zion may never, like, be healthy. And two, there's a even stronger chance he ain't going to want to stick around in New Orleans. Like, that relationship is already soured, so maybe move him while you still can, right? Depending on what type of offer you get. So that's the Pelicans' perspective, right? What could Atlanta send him? You could send him Cam Reddish, Bogdanovich, and picks. Now, if they like Kevin Huerter more, fine. Like, the Hawks have enough different pieces, I think, to entice the Pelicans, is my point. And if you're Atlanta, you just take a swing. You say, all right, he's out for the year. Get him in shape. And the next year, you roll out Trey and Zion, the most electrifying young duo in the league. I don't know. Just a thought. Crossed my mind. But they got to do something. They've got to do like maybe a 2-for-1 deal where you know, you've heard Reddish is on the block. But, yeah, they have the depth. They got to trade in 2 or 3 of these guys for one better piece. We did have a trade over the weekend. The Detroit Pistons have traded for Bol Bol. Detroit traded for Bol Bol. They sent Rodney Magruder in a second round pick to Denver. If you're Detroit, you're probably thinking, all right, cool, right? That we'll take a swing if that's all it costs. We'll take a swing with Bol Bol. But if that's all it costs from an organization like Denver, it probably means he ain't going to make it, right? Like, I get Denver has been a deep contending team the last few seasons. So not an ideal environment for Bol Bol to kind of like figure it out on the court and get minutes. But Denver also, you could argue, develops talent as good, if not better than any other team in the league. And they're patient. You look at the way they draft and how they do it, right? So you consider all those facts and they're moving off him for next to nothing. You know, it makes sense for both teams. It makes sense for both teams. I'm just saying when Denver, you know, trades a young guy, that means something to me more so than, let's say, if the Magic did. And hell, Denver will probably turn that second round pick into some sort of low-key star. But as far as Bol Bol goes, look, I watched him in the bubble. I've seen him play a few times in the G League. The problem with Bol Bol is he doesn't have a position to defend. Offensively, he's very skilled. You can play him offensively. He shoots threes, got a little handle, high release, right? He can't guard bigs. You can't stick him out on the perimeter. Like, he's too thin. It's his build. He looks like an alien out there. And there's no position for him to defend. And I'm guessing that ultimately, that's the conclusion that Denver came to. The Dallas Mavericks have won 6 in a row. And they've done most of it with Porzingis on the COVID list. You know? It's something to keep an eye on here. Kidd has them defending, which is impressive. A lot of people early on were like, oh, this was a huge mistake, right? Kidd's about to fuck this up, but they're defending. I did my complaining about Luka. You know, it all rests on Luka, as even though they played well without him, but right, at what point, Kidd's getting them to defend, at what point do they get Luka in shape and make a run here? Because they're another team. I look at Atlanta, Dallas, and then you got your usual suspects, right, in Sacramento and those guys, but is another team that feels like they could make a big move. We know how aggressive Mark Cuban is. And I also, you know, I feel like I got a good feel for Cuban because of the, I watch Shark Tank. Y'all mess with that show? That's a good show. I think Cuban's a smart enough, savvy enough businessman where he's not going to hold on to sunken costs. If he can make a move to get KP out of there, he's fine. I don't think he's going to be like, oh no, we need, you know. So I have my eye on Dallas here. They're streaking. They're playing defense. And it feels like they could make a move potentially to catapult them into the upper echelon of the West. Maybe not the top three. The top three set. But just below that, there's a lot of space. You feel me? What else happened? So Kevin Durant, 43 minutes in an overtime win against the Spurs yesterday. You know, you look at big picture in the East, you look at Brooklyn, all right, they've got Kyrie for the road games, and ultimately, it sets up for a clash with Milwaukee. Now, Milwaukee spanked them over the weekend as well. You're like, all right, whatever. It's a regular season game. That's fine. If I were to ask you, you look at Kevin Durant and you look at Giannis, where is Giannis truly superior to Kevin Durant? It's his body, right? His body and his motor. And what I'm getting at here is, this is not the roadmap to taking the Bucks out. Riding KD into the ground in the regular season. And I'm sure they would justify it by saying, well, we need to, right? We need to. Like, we're so depleted. I don't care. As long as you get in the playoffs, the Nets philosophy should be as long as we're in. As long as we avoid the play-in. Based off your roster construction. So playing KD 40 minutes a night and running him into the ground, again, that's not the roadmap to beating Giannis. If you're going to show up in the conference finals or whenever you happen to meet Milwaukee for this physical battle and Durant has been taxed all season long, I think it's a mistake, man. I think they have to swallow their pride and just, again, be willing to drop in the seedings. You know, we're talking about Klay and his comeback, and we'll get to see how Klay's mindset is in the rest of the season and his aggression. We'll talk about that. But I think part of Durant playing so much and wanting to shoulder so much of the burden is with his time away, the Achilles. I feel like he's like, man, I'm never going to take this for granted. I'm going to play every minute I can, right? There, I think there's an element to that. But I do, again, I think it's a mistake when you look at their path. You don't want to get in a brawl with Giannis. Like if KD and Giannis were going to fight, KD's path to victory is through skill and deception. He's got to make it about skill. If he's just going to get in a brawl with Giannis, he ain't coming out of that one. This is the Hezzy, brought to you by basketballgods.net. I'm out, y'all.